The Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world, and we kind of just say, just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Well, we're getting to the end of Lent, the beginning of spring, and that's appropriate because, at least I'm told, I'm not an etymologist or somebody who knows a lot about the history of words, but apparently the word Lent comes from that old English word meaning spring, and so it's kind of appropriate, although certainly in the past week or so in some parts of the country, it hasn't been very spring-like. But anyway, it is spring, and we are getting towards the end of Lent as we are very, very close to Holy Week in just a day or so. And so today we're going to have a conversation about a couple of different things. I mean, one of the things we're going to talk about is Good Friday. We're going to speak about the annual walks that people have on Good Friday that try to tie in the cross of Jesus Christ on Calvary in Jerusalem some 2,000 years ago to what's going on in the contemporary world. So in just a few minutes, I'm delighted that Dr. Martin Carney, who is a campus minister and teacher of religious studies at Fordham Prep in the Bronx part of New York City, will be with us. And we're going to speak about the Pax Christi Good Friday walk with him. And a little bit later on in the show, because in addition to, we're going to be speaking with Brother Tyrone Davis, and he's going to come into the studio here, and I'm delighted that he's going to do that. He is the director of the Office of Black Ministries of the Archdiocese of New York, and you know, previous in his career, he also served as an assistant district attorney in Brooklyn before moving on to do ministry in various places, teaching high school and also in this Office of Black Ministry. And since this weekend is the weekend in which there is the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C., which is against violence and particularly against gun violence, I'm going to speak with Brother Tyrone about his experience with that because he's witnessed kind of a lot of the young people taking an active role in the New York area. So those are the two people we're going to be speaking with on our show today, and I'm delighted that we're going to do so as we kind of get to the end of Lent and the beginning of Holy Week. So let's go to our first guest, who is Dr. Martin Carney, who is the director of campus ministry and religious studies. He's a teacher at Fordham Prep in New York City, the Bronx part of New York City. And Dr. Carney, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love today.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, Monsignor Sullivan.
Great. And, you know, for even though we're a nationwide show, we always like to kind of remind people that the Bronx is the only part of New York City that's connected to the rest of the United States. Everything else is an island, but the Bronx, you can get right to the rest of the United States. So we're delighted to have somebody who's connected with the rest of the country on our show. So thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
So give us listeners a little bit how you kind of wound up where you are in your career. How'd you kind of wind up teaching at Fordham? How'd you wind up studying theology? How'd you move in that direction?
Well, let's see. I'm a native of Rochester, New York. And after college, I volunteered down at Covenant House in New York City, working with runaway and homeless kids. And I did that for about 4 years and then moved up to the Bronx. Was involved with some community organizing. I taught religion at Monsignor Scanlon High School, and I lived right next to Fordham and started taking classes in the School of Religion and Religious Studies, Religious Education, I should say. It kind of just snowballed into a master's degree, and I said, I really like this stuff. So I jumped campus over the School of Arts and Sciences and pursued a PhD in theology. I was very interested and wrote my dissertation on liberation theology of Latin America, but trying to see where it might have a foothold or significance in North America. particularly in the Bronx.
So that's very interesting because some of our listeners know, because I've mentioned it, my first assignment when I was a deacon, and you know, when I was ordained, the way they kind of did the progression for you to be a priest is you were actually a whole year working, living as a deacon in the parish, and I was assigned to a parish in the Bronx. And by any chance, did the community organizing you do have anything to do with the Northwest Bronx Community and Clergy Coalition?
It did. I was an organizer for them. I worked in the Fordham-Bedford area, around the area of Our Lady of Refuge, where Bishop John Jenick was the pastor.
Yep.
So I was involved there. And I also I worked at a place I know you're familiar with, POTS, Part of the Solution.
Sure.
On Webster Avenue. And I did some organizing for them and fundraising while I was pursuing my PhD.
And probably, you know, we could spend the whole show talking about people who we have in common, and I don't want to do that. But you probably did some work with John Riley, Brian Byrne, and maybe a little bit with Paul Brandt, a Jesuit.
Yes, that's true. John Riley is a friend of mine. He lives right around the corner. He and his wife Lois Haar works over at Manhattan College. We go back a long way.
Well,
with those things.
So anyway, so now we know a little bit about how you got to where you are, and you've been at Fordham for a number of years. You're not doing a sprint there. You're doing a marathon there.
Yeah, I started in 95 as a religious studies teacher and working in campus ministry. You mentioned that I'm director of campus ministry. That's way too high a title for me. It goes to my friend Mike Kravitz. But I teach four religion.
Listen, we promote everybody on the show.
Okay.
We give him a promotion. So if he comes on the show, he'll be the senior director of campus ministry.
Right.
Okay.
So in 95 to the present, and I also I'm an adjunct at the university. I teach I've taught theology there, and I'm teaching a current class called Community Service Social Action, in which my students, it's a senior values seminar, and they have to do community, what's called now community engagement. They used to call it service learning, but it's community engagement. And so all my students actually do it over at POTS, which is about a 10-minute walk from the university. So it's kind of a nice spiral, if you will, of events and such.
So let me ask you this, since you've been at this for a while, have you noticed kind of any change in, you just mentioned a word change from service learning to engagement, but have you noticed any change in either the attitudes of the students or the way that you have to deal with the issue of people being engaged or doing service in the world over your time at Fordham?
Well, I have to say that, what I know best is at Fordham Prep, we have a senior service program, and our seniors are required to do 70 hours of community service. And many of them do it over the summer between their junior and senior years in our program in Ecuador. We have a program in Tennessee. We send 5-6 trips down to Tennessee. We have trips to Camden, New Jersey, the Romero Center. And so many of our students do their service there. And then senior year, they'll continue many do it at POTS, but we have various nursing homes and tutoring programs, Fordham-Bedford Community Center, Concourse House, a lot of areas around here. But Fordham Prep draws from a wide geographic area, so guys are doing service all over Westchester County, in Manhattan, Queens. And, you know, in terms, Monsignor, of attitudes, I find that our service program is very coordinated. And in my experience, by the time the guys get to senior year, I think they understand why service is at the heart of the school's mission. We talk about being community of faith, scholarship, and service. And I would say 15 years ago, I felt like I met with more resentment. Guys saying, oh, why do we have to do service? And we just got to do service to graduate. I find the guys to be much more open to understanding, yeah, that this is part of who I am and who I want to be. So that's my experience. We have senior year service classes. So once a cycle, our seniors will meet with a service teacher, and there's a curriculum, and we talk about the various values involved in, you know, for example, one lesson we do is a budget. And we have this woman, she's a single mom with two kids working at minimum wage, and we go through her budget. You know, this is what she's going to have to pay for rent. This is for medical. This is food and such. And the guys see it at the end of the budget. Wait a second. After all is said and done, there's $110 here for travel, for gifts, for clothing, for how do you do it? And so we ask the guys to not only to serve people in need, but to ask, why are they in need? You know, what are the bigger issues involved, the structural issues, the social justice issues involved?
We're speaking with Dr. Martin Carney, who works in campus ministry at Fordham Prep. He's an adjunct at Fordham University and teaches religious studies. And he's been doing it for quite a while, and he kind of got his start in doing a little bit of community organizing in the Northwest Bronx, and then decided he liked learning about religion and teaching about religion, and so he's been doing it for more than a couple of decades. So I'm delighted that Dr. Martin Carney is with us. So, Dr. Carney, let's now go to the next step, because since we are getting close to Holy Week, you've participated in the Pax Christi Good Friday Walk, the Stations of the Cross, the very traditional Stations of the Cross, but not done in a traditional setting. How'd you come to get involved in the Pax Christi Good Friday Walk?
Well, let's see, Monsignor. I've personally been involved in the walk, I think, for around 32 years. It was something when I was living in Manhattan with Covenant House Community, that a number of members did. And, you know, I have to say, back in the 80s there, I was not, you know, I thought we have to serve each other, and Matthew 25, you know, feed the hungry and clothe the naked and stuff. But I did kind of undergo a conversion in my life to the social justice elements of, you know, why are people hungry and thirsty in the richest nation on the planet. So, eventually, I'd say in the mid to late 80s, I started going on the walk with my wife, Dana. She we had friends who were doing it. And for me, you know, to take our faith, you know, in the stations, a spiritual devotion like the stations, and to connect them with modern day instances of injustice and suffering, to me, it was, you know, intellectually and theologically brilliant, and personally deeply moving. So, you know, as we go through these stations, and Monsignor, you and I actually have met before. I know you always start us off in Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza with the prayer and such.
And I'm going to do it again this year. I was privileged to be asked to do it, and I'm going to do it again next Friday.
Beautiful. I look forward. I will introduce myself directly to you when we do that. But you know, moving from station to station and the chanting, you know, the Ubi Caritas et a, I mean, it's just beautiful. And I get a special kick out of the police cars, you know, stopping the traffic on First Avenue and Third Avenue, and as far as the eye can see, those folks have to wait while we finish our procession across the street. But then going to the various, you know, Jesus falling for the second time and having that connected with, say, the way we're failing our students in public schools, to me, it's profoundly meaningful.
Now, do you involve any of the students at Fordham Prep in it?
We do. So I was talking with my coworker and friend Paul Homer, who's, you know, the two of us run this. And I was asking him this morning how long we've been doing it. He thinks we've been doing it for about 15 years.
Okay.
So here's the situation. We invite the students to join with us, and, you know, I mentioned these service requirements. Students can receive up to 5 service hours if they participate in the walk. Now, they don't have to do the walk per se. There's a lot of different ways they can fulfill the service requirement, but we invite them to come along with us. And we've been getting about 15 to 20 students, you know, per year doing this. And I'm going to say there are even students who have that service requirement done but still want to be part of this. And I'm also going to throw in there that we've had alums come back and bringing their parents to be part of this walk. And maybe 10 years ago, Rosemary Pace, I think, asked, she's, you know, the head of Pax Christi.
Right.
She asked us, would we be willing to do a station, you know, to climb up on the truck and speak into the mic, to write it up. And we were thrilled to do it. So, again, I can't give you the exact years. We've been doing a station. We write the statement, the petitions. We get students to go up on the truck and do it. And it's deeply meaningful. You know, I'm here to be candid with you. I think for many of the guys, this is not where they're at personally in their spirituality. But I think it's, as my friend Paul was saying, you know, they may walk in one door, but we're interested in the door they leave Fordham Prep from. And I do think it's transformative.
Well, you know, I think what you're talking about is something that I think many of us have found in trying to at least do our little part to make the world a better place, is that there is an incredibly natural, generous instinct among Catholics. And I oftentimes quote, which is a consistent survey information that they find, is that kind of the two most important things that Catholics think are important to their faith are the resurrection of Jesus and helping other people. And, right, you know, depending on which year you do the survey, sometimes helping people even gets a little bit of a higher place than the resurrection. And so I do think what you're pointing out is that there is a natural tendency on the part of Catholics to kind of want to help people in need. Now, where I think you and Paul and others are doing just an incredible job is trying to say, okay, we're helping people in need, but can we be a little bit more reflective upon that? Can we say, yeah, is there something more to that's going on in our world that's requiring all of this service? Is there something going on that is, you know, maybe the way we're organizing our world that makes all of this necessary? And as you know, that next step isn't something that's very, very easy, as logical, as rational as it is. And as soon as you take that step, then everybody says, oh, you're being political, you're getting into politics.
Right.
Well, maybe not. But it's just, to me, as human beings, it's a little bit unintelligent to not ask the question why, or what can we do to prevent it, rather than what do we do to remedy it once it's happened.
Yeah, no, I think you said that very well.
So what I want you to do, in addition, when you introduce yourself to me, I'd love to meet some of the kids who are coming with you and just get a chance to say hello to them and thank them for taking, you know, an early Friday morning to come and to walk with Jesus on the way of the cross.
I would love to do that, and we'll be happy to do that. That would be a week from Friday,
yep,
right? Oh boy.
Yep. So it's we're getting there. So hey, go back, do your work, go teach, go do everything you're doing, and thanks for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Monsignor, it's been my pleasure, and thank you so much. And I actually have a snow day today.
All right. Well, you know, as we talk to everybody, everybody's in different parts of the country. Some are experiencing rain, some are experiencing sun, some are experiencing snow. So anyway, Dr. Martin Carney, he campus ministry, Fordham Prep, adjunct at Fordham University, will participate next week in the Good Friday Pax Christi Stations of the Cross Walk. Thanks for being with us on the show.
Thank you, Monsignor Sullivan. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, if you want to learn more about the things we talk about here on Just Love, you can check out my blog, justloveblog.com. And remember to follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. And you'll learn a little bit more about the topics that we are talking about. We're going to take a break now, and we'll come back and we'll kind of continue our conversation as we head into Holy Week. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This is our weekly conversation on the church in the world. And as we're approaching Holy Week, we're kind of talking about a variety of topics that are critically important as we celebrate Holy Week. We just had a good conversation with Dr. Martin Carney, who will be participating with some of his students in the Pax Christi Good Friday Walk on Good Friday right near the United Nations in New York City. And in a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with Brother Tyrone Davis, who is the director of the Office of Black Ministry of the Archdiocese of New York, and who I have to confess I kind of stole something beautiful that he wrote last week on and kind of put it on my blog because I thought he did such a moving job of talking about what some of the students at Catholic schools were doing in participating in what, for many of you, you'll be listening to today is the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. So I'm really grateful that in a few minutes, Brother Tyrone will be with us here in the studio. But, you know, I do want to take a little bit of time and I want to talk about something that's probably not terribly pleasant, okay? I did spend some time in this past week up in Albany. I was there with Cardinal Dolan and some other people, and we were trying to speak to the legislators of New York State about some of the issues that are critically important to us as a church from the point of view of what we think a just society should look like. And these days, there's a lot of stuff going on with politicians that can cause us to be very, very negative, very, very thing. Let me, you know, I want to lay it out for you. So I want to listen to, let's listen to a couple of clips. The first one I want is about, you know, the former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, who was involved. Let's listen to the clip.
Former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort appeared in court Thursday in Virginia. He pleaded not guilty to 18 counts of tax fraud and other charges. Manafort's trial is set for July 10th.
Yeah, and we know that subsequent to that clip, there was kind of a plea deal that was struck on some of those issues. And it's sad. It really is sad when things like that happen. Because, you know, they speak to kind of an undermining of our democratic system in a lot of different ways. And so it's kind of sad when things like that happen. And, you know, we try not to be partisan on this show, but we got to point out when people do things that are wrong, we have to call them out. And so let's go to the other side of the aisle and let's listen to just something that happened within the past few weeks from somebody close to another elected official.
For years, Joe Prococo was Governor Cuomo's right-hand man, able to influence government decisions with a single phone call. But prosecutors said he sold that influence for more than $300,000 worth of bribes. And Tuesday, a jury mostly agreed, convicting him on three counts of bribery and public corruption.
And so we hear, again, another person who was a public servant who basically was using the position for some private gain. And the reason why I kind of mention those things is because they're all in the news, and so we can't sweep them under the carpet. But what I want to say to our listeners is we can't give up on the political system. That we can't just say, oh, they're all bad, they're all awful, and therefore we're not going to do anything about it. You know, as I said, I was up in our state capitol, the New York state capitol, earlier this week, and I met with a number of politicians who are really trying to do a good job. I'm not saying none of us are perfect, but there are so many, both elected and appointed and civil servants who are working in government who are really trying to do the right thing. And it's so hard to kind of keep one's head up in the midst of there is so much that is corrupting in the whole system that we have. But from our Catholic perspective, we have to be engaged. Even though it seems uphill sometimes, you know, we got to do it. And that's critically important. And that's why I'm delighted that we're going to speak with Brother Tyrone Davis in a few minutes, because he's witnessed the fact that some of our young people actually are getting involved and they are doing things despite some of the negative stuff that's going on in the world around us. So, you know, we can't get discouraged. There's a lot to be discouraged about. But we got to keep putting one foot after the in front of the other in order to try to make our world a little bit better and a little bit more compassionate. Tom, we're still dealing with the opioid crisis, aren't we?
We are, Monsignor, yes.
So there's been a little bit of noise about what's going on with regard to that?
There is. Just this past week, Monsignor, back on March 20th, President Trump announced that he had a new plan to fix the opioid crisis, but the plan itself has raised some eyebrows. Just for listeners' sake, there's a brief reminder we'd like to give is that opioids are painkillers, but they come in two types. They come in the legal type, such as OxyContin and Vicodin. They also come in non-legal forms, such as heroin. The epidemic, of course, has killed tens of thousands of people in the past couple of years. And last year, President Trump had declared this a public health emergency. That alone didn't do much. But now he has announced a new plan that's going to crack down on drug traffickers. And one of the penalties that is talked about is the death penalty. Some people are saying that's very similar to what Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines is doing. And there are some questions that could end up getting held up in court. But supporters say that drug traffickers are responsible for killing thousands of people, and that Justice Department already has on the books some laws that give the death penalty for drug-related crimes. Other parts of the plan also include cutting down on opioid prescriptions and also expanding treatment options for addicts.
Tom, thank you for bringing that up. And I do think, again, in the world that we live in, it's a little bit problematic because what we tend to focus on are those parts of public policies which are controversial, those parts which are tend to paralyze us from doing anything. I mean, from our position as a church, we certainly have tremendous, tremendous problems with capital punishment, the death penalty, almost to the point of saying that there's almost no case in which we would consider it to be justified. And so that would be problematic from our point of view. And what it does is it creates the raising up of issues which prevent us from doing the 80-90% of things that we all agree on need to be done to deal with the crisis of opioids. And so, again, thanks for raising that. But we got to keep focused on those things that are really can help us to move forward and that don't divide us. So, you know what? I think, Tom, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to speak with Brother Tyrone Davis, the director of the Office of Black Ministries. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. And just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. If you want to learn a little bit more about what we talk about here on Just Love, you can check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. We're just on the eve of Holy Week, and we are also just marking the day in which hundreds of thousands of young people from throughout the United States will march for our lives in Washington, D.C. to protest gun violence and to try to make our world a place in which there is a reduction of gun violence. I am delighted to have on my show now Brother Tyrone Davis, who is the director of the Office of Black Ministries. He's also the director of the Pierre Toussaint Scholarship Fund. And for our listeners, Pierre Toussaint is on his way to becoming a saint. And Brother Tyrone is one of the people involved in that. He gets this fancy title of vice postulator of the cause. Now, I don't know what that means. Okay,
I don't either.
But it sounds good to me. And actually, you know, when I had Brother Tyrone come on the guest, he reminded me of that. So I have to double his pay for being a guest on the show here, because he's the vice postulator for the cause of Pierre Toussaint.
Very good.
It is good. It is good. So anyway, so listen, you have been involved in working with young people for many, many years. Tell our listeners a little bit about the very moving experience you had probably just a week or so ago when you were kind of on your way to work.
Sure, sure. Yes, Monsignor. And I think that the beauty of the experience, I think it was last week, was that most of it was unplanned. I wish that most of my journeys into work were this inspiring. I was leaving. I was really planning to be present for the participation of the young ladies at Saint Jean Baptiste High School. I was informed that they were going to be participating, and I was going to be a quiet supporter, maybe across the street, inconspicuously dressed and so forth. However, as I was leaving Cardinal Hayes High School in the morning, I had the beauty of seeing these young men. Who had planned the day largely, they had planned the day, the morning, and they were moving outside, they were moving inside, and it was in a manner that was, for me, very, very unusual, almost a very solemn manner, that they were moving themselves from the outside to the inside. Then I got into my car, and I was driving down Lexington Avenue in Manhattan. And again, on my way to St. Jean Baptiste, which is probably around the 70s, and as I was coming to about 110th Street, I could see the young people from Cristo Rey who were walking, I believe, around the block, and were, some of them were returning to the school building. And I didn't expect that, but I was very, very pleased to see it. And then as I continued moving down Lexington Avenue, I could see the young ladies from St. Jean Baptiste High School returning from their walk to Park Avenue, a very, very prominent street in Manhattan, obviously. And they had signs expressing their concerns and so forth. And they were going into the church. Evidently, they had concluded their walk. And so I decided to park the car and go inside and participate, or at least witness their prayer service or whatever they were doing in the church. And I'll tell you, it was powerful. The young ladies were speaking to what was most important in our lives, in our society. They were speaking to their concerns about life, about the use of guns, about safety, about justice. And I was just so moved and impressed by not only what the young ladies were saying who were speaking, but by the response of their classmates. You could hear a pin drop in that church. And then as they moved from there to return to their classes, again, there was a solemn movement, a solemnity about their movement that to me is unusual oftentimes for young people.
We're speaking with Brother Tyrone Davis, who is the director of the Office of Black Ministries and also the director of the Pierre Toussaint Scholarship Fund and also vice postulator for the cause of the sainthood of Pierre Toussaint. And we're speaking about just an incredible experience, which is so relevant to today, when hundreds of thousands of young people will be marching for our lives in Washington, D.C., and I think it was the month anniversary, sadly, the month anniversary of the deaths in Parkland, Florida, in which a number of high schools, many high schools, kind of expressed solidarity and almost a little bit, we might say serendipitously or grace-filled mm-hmm. that Brother Tyrone was able to witness some of that. Now, you haven't gotten all the way to work yet, so
yes,
let's keep going.
But moving a little bit, speeding it up a bit, after I left the prayer service at St. Jean Baptiste Church, I continued going down, and as I was getting close to the Catholic Center, I could see the young ladies from St. Vincent Ferrer, who were returning to school. Again, the same solemnity. And as I arrived in the Catholic Center, I was informed about the young ladies from Cathedral. And then, of course, I had some information from Xavier and other schools throughout the Archdiocese and certainly beyond who were participating. It was just an unusually inspiring morning for me, just moving into work.
Well, it and again, for some of our listeners throughout the country, let me just share with you a little bit of the journey that Brother Tyrone took. So the first where he started out is one of the poorest, lowest income zip codes in the United States, in the South Bronx, where he began. Where he wound up was probably one of the richest zip
sure.
codes in there. And the other, which is interesting, went through these four or five schools, and quite frankly, though the young people in those schools are reflective of the diversity of New York.
Absolutely.
It was, you know, even in all neighborhoods in different places, and it was just almost a kind of a symphony of people expressing
sure.
their wanting to get involved.
And I think the beauty of the experience was here I am, and who would define myself as a teacher, in addition to being a pastoral minister, an administrator, and many other kinds of ways. But on this particular occasion, I had the opportunity to be the one who was the recipient of the leadership and the teaching that was really being directed by young people. And I thought that was powerful.
Well, it is tremendously powerful. Did you ever, in the midst of it, when you were there, or any of the things that they were saying?
Yes. And you know, the young ladies at St. Jean Baptiste were saying some powerful things. I also had the privilege of seeing the recorded words of some of the students from Xavier High School.
Ah.
And I thought the words were
can you share some of that
extremely
with us?
Powerful. Oh, absolutely. One young man says, "Today's walkout was not only a national symbol that displayed our generation's voice, it also illustrates our school's mission of being committed to justice. Our community came out and bonded together physically and spiritually to memorialize the victims of Parkland, Florida. Each minute that went by allowed for reflection and refocus on our school's goals to create men ready to set the world on fire."
That is a pretty powerful statement.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. If we didn't know better, we might think these were words that were coming from one of the prophets in Scripture, like Jeremiah or someone of that nature. But here were young people speaking about what I'd like to think were things that they had been discussing maybe for years in their classrooms. But now they got a chance to really put on display what Catholic social teaching and social justice is all about. They got a chance to be the leaders and the teachers for the day.
So let me ask you a question which doesn't have an answer, okay? But here's the question. I mean, there have been other shootings. There's been other things.
Mm-hmm.
What happened here that seemingly, at least there's an incipient movement
mm-hmm.
that is created? What was different about this?
You know, I don't know, and I'm not sure we all know. I must say I feel as though it was the hand of the Lord in all of this. It was a moment in time, much like I mentioned Jeremiah the prophet, much like a moment in time when the Lord touched young people and gave them a voice, allowed them to recognize that that what they were learning only has real meaning if they were doing something about it. And again, I don't know what was the actual impetus for these young people just kind of taking the lead, but they have. And I think it's powerful indeed.
So my feeling is that one of the things that people like me, the old and decrepit types, got to do, we got to just get out of the way.
Yeah.
And say a prayer and hope that it is a movement that continues. Mm. And to hope that it's a movement that goes beyond the single issue of gun violence and maybe begins to raise questions of justice and injustice that go across the board.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, again, if we are truly confident in the things that we preach about, the things that we teach about, we've got to trust the products of our teaching. We've got to trust that these young people have a voice, that they somehow get it. And then we've got to learn how to maybe not just totally step aside, right, but we've got to learn how to be the followers of the new leaders. We've got to learn how to be people who are supportive at some times and at other times are empowering. We've got to be the people that say, like the Lord said to Jeremiah, you know, you're all right. I will give you the words if necessary, but you have a mission, you have a job, you have a calling. Go for it. And we've got to learn how to share these roles and responsibilities in social change.
Well, you know, the word that a lot of people use, which I've come to appreciate a lot more than I did a while ago, is they talk about accompanying people. Mm-hmm. And it's like I've come to like that word better because, as you said, and probably I was a little bit too glib, it's more than just getting out of the way.
Sure.
But it's kind of standing alongside and maybe, you know, with a little bit of experience, you nudge a little bit when it's getting off track. But you walk there and you're lifted up by the people you're walking with. And I just think it's a great time. And I am very, very hopeful and mm-hmm. prayerful that this is a movement that continues of involvement.
Sure. I think it's an inspired time. And these students from Xavier, which you can see their words on their website, really speak about an opportunity, a particular opportunity that we have, a moment in time that we have to seize, and we really have to act upon it as if we have been called. You know, they speak about being men on fire, on fire to change the world. They speak about the words that they have been taught, which is, you know, you are being called to be men and women in other cases for others. That this is what you have been called to be and to do, and now is your chance to do it. It's that moment in time for you.
Yeah, and what's a little bit concerning to me mm-hmm. is the fact that some of the change that needs to be done needs to happen in the political sphere.
Sure.
And we adult types mm-hmm. in the political sphere aren't doing such a good job in getting things done.
Sure.
And I'm just praying that some of the young people who don't become too impatient mm-hmm. that when it doesn't change overnight,
sure.
that it then becomes discouragement and turning back in on oneself.
Yeah, and I think that that's so true. And I think that in discovering their voice, they also discover the tools that they have at their disposal for change. I mean, these young men from Xavier and the young ladies at St. Jean Baptiste, they are, many of them, 17 and 18 years old. They're at voting age, or they're just right there on the edge of it. And they recognize that these the politicians and the public servants really are going to have to answer to them in short order, and I think that gives them an added sense of this is one of the tools at their disposal in terms of the vote.
And it is, and it is good. So I am this I'm actually going to try to stop by, maybe say a prayer with, and to be inspired by some of the young people who are actually in Washington for this march on our lives, for our lives. And because I think it is a moment that, that, as you say, we need to support, we need to be inspired by, and I know I can use a little inspiration.
And we need to share it. You know, I think the beauty of, as you mentioned off air, that, that there are a couple of buses that are being sponsored by Catholic Charities that are going from some part of the city. And then there's also a bus of young people from Harlem. And it's not just a bus of young people. That it may be that half of the participants are parents and adults who are, in many cases, deciding to participate at the prompting and the initiation of their children. And they are there to walk with them in the process. And I think that's a beautiful opportunity we have to share these experiences of change.
Well, Brother Tyrone Davis, the director of the Office of Black Ministry, the director of the Pierre Toussaint Scholarship Fund, vice postulator for the cause of the canonization of Pierre Toussaint, thank you for taking the time to be with us on Just Love, and thanks for stopping by the studio to talk with us.
Well, thank you very much, Monsignor. Great. My pleasure.
Thank you. You know, Tom, there was a little bit of a kind of a sad, I want to talk about one thing that is going on, which I want to really talk for just a moment about it. There was a Mississippi law that was banning abortion after 15 weeks, and the judge blocked that law from going into effect. And I want to talk about it because I think the abortion issue is certainly a very, very critically important issue. And I want to kind of put it in context that you know, our Catholic belief is very clear that human life begins at the first moment of conception and therefore merits protection. It merits not being taken because we believe that from that first moment of conception, it is human life and therefore merits protection and dignity and respect. I think it's sometimes hard for our visible world to recognize that because at the first moments of conception, it doesn't look like a person, doesn't look like what we come to recognize, but that's what our belief is. And so it is important that the Lord tries to protect that. The thing, though, I think that we need to keep remembering as Catholics is that as important as the law is in protecting human life and being a guide and being a teacher, there's a lot more that all of us can do to create an atmosphere in which human life is respected. We can do a lot of things that are not related to the law to create an atmosphere in which there is a dignity given to human life. And for all of the people who kind of want to ensure the legal protection of young life from the first moment of conception, great. But we can't stop there. We can't just say that it's about the law, but it's about other things. It's about the atmosphere. And while we can't water down everything to say that everything is all the same, but, you know, when we don't show dignity to adults, when we don't show dignity to children, it just became so much easier to say, well, it doesn't make, you know, this doesn't even look like a human being. So why do we have to treat that with respect? Why do we have to protect that life? So I do think as, you know, this awareness, this activism that we're seeing among young people, which is for the moment focused a lot on gun violence, school safety, it provides us with the opportunity to say, well, what are we doing to uphold the dignity of all human life? What are we doing to make sure that we respect human life wherever it is, you know, however much money human life has, whatever race that human life is, whatever the ethnicity of that human life is, at what stage is it an elderly person who really is not terribly active anymore? What dignity does that person deserve? What about the unborn child? And so, again, we almost become a little bit tied up in what the law is and what the rules, what the legislation is, what the Supreme Court decisions are. In no way do I want to dismiss that. But I also want to say that that's not the be and end all. And I've said it before, is I think one of the mistakes we make is we look for, we mistake government for society. There's a lot we can do at society to create an environment in which there is respect, in which there is dignity. I mean, our talk with the religious studies person from Dr. Carney from Fordham, he's doing a whole lot in encouraging students to be part of a service world, to respect the world that's around them, to treat people compassionately. So, you know, I wanted to bring up that situation in Mississippi, and it's important to follow what's going on there. But you know, even if there is not the progress that's made in terms of the law protecting life, there's absolutely no reason why all of us can't do our part to create an atmosphere in which life is respected, in which dignity is given to every single person. It's not merely up to legislation. It's not merely up to the law. All of us, in the way we live our lives, the way we talk to each other, the way we give witness to each other, the way we accompany one another, that can be a tremendous help in creating an atmosphere in which there is respect for human life from its earliest moments to its latest moments. So, you know, we're getting near to Holy Week. I am delighted that we had our guests on today who I think gave us a good feel for moving into Holy Week, whether it be tying the Stations of the Cross to contemporary world or whether it be engaging the world, trying to create a world which is more just based upon our Catholic Christian faith. So as we move into Palm Sunday and Holy Week, a very blessed Holy Week to all of our listeners. Follow me on my blog, justloveblog.org. Follow me on Twitter, MSGRKSullivan. Thank you for joining us on Just Love. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.